Rob, can I ask you a quick question?
As long as it's quick, yeah. Real quick.
Don't you hate it when you're a filmmaker with writer's block, so you decide to get away from all at a lakeside Airbnb, but you end up accidentally ruining the marriage of the owners?
It's like, it's the thing I enjoy the least about my week.
Oh, okay. I thought it would be higher on your list than that. Well, what about when you are the lead in a film being made by your spouse and then they manipulate you into believing that your spouse and the person that you're starring opposite are fucking in order to get real emotions out of you at the expense of your mental health, so you get shit-faced and then you fuck the cameraman only to find out that your spouse didn't cheat and was just trying to push you as an artist?
So that's only happened to me once, but it was a camera woman, so I can't really relate.
Can't relate, yeah, yeah.
I've got no idea what she was going through.
Sound. Well, this may or may not have happened to our protagonist in Lawrence Michael Levine's 2020 indie darling, Black Bear.
It's a bear.
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. That's right, we're doing Black Bear, a little indie movie that has made huge waves on my mental health since seeing it a few weeks ago and then around
and nowhere else.
Six more times since. Hey, it screened at Sundance. It did a thing.
It did an thing.
It did an thing. Yep. But before we get into what we're doing, let's ask the most important question, Bud. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Work's really busy. It's only looking to get busier as well. So I'm trying. I'm keeping my head above the waves.
Good.
I'm at that point where, like, I'm not smashing it, but I'm surviving.
Cool.
And that's fine, because compared to what I was doing last time in my life,
yeah,
like, I literally crashed the car of my life into a wall.
Yeah.
So, like, doing 60... I'm quite happy with that. I'm quite happy with that.
I'm proud of you, man.
But I'm happy with that, man. How are you?
I'm petrified, mate, if I'm honest.
I can, yeah. I can imagine why. So
I had obviously, like, I've got a collapsed lung.
You do?
Surgery's coming up.
It is.
Shitting it.
Yeah.
So I ended up Googling it, going through it all. So mid-panic attack, I'm fucking watching videos of what's going to be happening in my torso.
Yeah.
And it was fucking feral. It's rank. It is rank.
Shall we, in the interest of keeping you distracted and not thinking about it, sum up the show a little bit and talk about a movie that you love, and hopefully by the end of the hour, you'll feel a little bit better.
Let's do it. We're going to be getting into why 3 might indeed be the magic number.
Is this film secretly a Coldplay song?
Ooh, what does the black bear really symbolise?
Why has Ben been single for so long?
That's a fucking jar of worms.
None of these are written down either. I'm just dropping these on you.
You are. How the last frame of this film changes everything.
And finally, what does it mean,
What's
Ben?
What's it all mean?
What does it all mean? Genuinely, I don't know what this one means. You told me to research nothing. I watched it.
Yeah.
I'll get it. We'll get into it, but I'm confused and I'm going to need a lot of explaining from you.
I've got a bunch of stuff and it's all things, but listen, just right at the top of the show, I need to say it. We've been doing heavy films forever now, and I feel like I haven't been dipping into the B-movie well as much as I should have been. No. So for the next few weeks, can we just fuck around?
Well, I don't know, Ben, to be honest. I don't know, because here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
When this show started,
right,
we were bringing specific kinds of the films we loved.
Yeah.
You were bringing a lot of B movies.
Loved them.
I was bringing a lot of wordy dramas.
You were.
You would constantly throw things at me and go, it's like a fucking book.
Isn't
it's
it?
Like a fucking book. Isn't if it? I wanted to read a fucking book, I'd pick up a fucking book.
This is
but
from
I
the
don't
time.
Want to read a fucking book. Yeah. So I won't read a fucking book. And the last 6 or 7 weeks,
right,
you've brought books. This is a play. This is a three-hander.
Yeah, it is.
This is three people on stage. It doesn't need to be a film.
No.
This could very easily be a play.
I think it's written as
you're,
a play.
You are writing me out of this podcast.
Nah.
I am so redundant right now. I don't know who I am or what I do or what I bring.
I mean,
you're bringing books.
I am. I've read 3 books in the last month, buddy.
It's disgusting.
And it is gross, isn't it? Three. And 2 of them were pretty big.
We're both poor, all right? Yeah. But the whole point was, I was the poor and intelligent one.
The posh one.
And you were the poor and stupid one.
The common one.
The common one.
Yeah.
The common as muck, pie bomb.
This is why we've got such a large miner. You know, like, they leave the mines in Yorkshire.
Mm-hmm.
They pop on the Every Movie Ever podcast and they're like, Just fucking, where's my boy?
Okay.
Where's the boy who's representing the miners' union?
Right, okay. I thought you meant children, and I was very confused.
This is why I had to clarify. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, mint.
As soon as miners came out of your mouth.
You know what I'm saying? I've written the breakdown this week, right? Because apparently I'm the fucking wordy one now.
Yeah. Apparently I'm fucking useless.
You're the one that's now the fucking Angel Delight over there sitting in your little cocktail glass. Pretended to be a dessert. So I've written it. It's a weird movie. It's spaced weirdly. The third act, I've not gone into any detail whatsoever because this film, I can't begin to tell you how protected this film is. The cast, the crew, the director, in interviews since the premiere at Sundance, up until very recently, have not gone into it at all. There's no depth to these interviews at all because
it's very much a film that's best experienced.
You have to experience it. Just go into it blind. I'll break down bits of it, but it's not going to be a thorough thing. Yeah. This is a heavy spoilers warning. If you're going to watch this film, you have to do it now.
Right.
Because after this episode, it is fundamentally going to be a different watch. And that's just objectively fact. So go and watch it. Come back to the show.
Yeah.
Because we need your attention.
Yeah. Before we have the full emotional breakdown, let's get this partial plot breakdown.
We'll do it.
Because I know you've kept some things back. I haven't. I've got questions
relevant
to the plot.
Sick.
From Dot.
Yeah, that's good.
All right.
Let's do that. So I'm gonna do act one.
Nice.
I've titled them. You're gonna do act two. And the only reason that's gonna think that wasn't my original plan, it's just that I can't figure out how to make that text bigger.
That's
so
fine.
Enjoy reading that one.
Nice.
So act one. The Bear in the Road. Alison, played by Aubrey Plaza, a filmmaker with writer's block, arrives at a secluded lake house for inspiration. She's greeted by the quirky, tension-ridden hipster couple, Gabe, played by Christopher Abbott, a would-be musician, and Blair, Sarah Gadon, his pregnant feminist partner.
Mm.
Their passive-aggressive bickering quickly morphs into emotional warfare. Like that?
Yeah.
Because we just did warfare.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, okay.
Emotional warfare, and Alison, ever the provocateur, fans the flames. Think Jeremy Kyle, but with no security guards and a few too many wines. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful. Very much that.
As night falls, unwanted confessions, flirting, lies, jealousy, and yes, a literal black bear escalate one dramatic dinner into a car crash level meltdown. Pun intended.
Yeah, because they crashed the car because they've done too much recreation and not enough parking.
And everyone gets that joke because they've paused, watched the film and come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. You take this
Act
one.
Act two, The Bear by the Boathouse.
Ooh.
Right. So ignore everything that Ben's just said because the film starts fresh. We now meet the gang again, but this time it's on a film set and nothing is quite what it was. Gabe is now the director.
Mm-hmm.
Alison is now the lead actress, also married to Gabe.
Yeah.
And Blair plays the temptress.
Yeah.
Their roles and relationships have reversed. The entire dynamic becomes a dark psychological sandbox.
Yeah.
Gabe is intentionally manipulating Allison's jealousy and toying with her paranoia like a cunty puppet master for, inverted commas, authentic performances. I would argue all puppet masters are cunty, but hey. And the lines between acting and reality blur in a wonderfully uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
Allison spirals, drinking, disappearing, emotionally breaking down both in and out of character.
Heartbreaking.
The scenes collapse into real fights. The crew's squirming is almost palpable.
Yeah. Right. Act three. The Bear in Her Head. Self-explanatory once you've seen the fucking film.
Go watch the film.
But we'll cover this shortly.
Right.
Because I've written a bunch, buddy. But give me your initial reaction, buddy. What was going through your head when you first watched this?
Okay. Well, I watched Black Bear probably in the wrong mood for it. I'm going to just hold my hand up.
Okay. Right?
I was very, very tired. I was feeling a little bit overwhelmed, like we were talking about earlier, a little bit overbusy. And like, I just needed like a little bit of kindness in my life.
A little bit of escapism, some would say.
Not even escapism.
No.
Like, Just kindness.
You're so close to hitting my taste in movies. It's unreal.
It's grim, isn't it?
Yeah.
Black Bear is not a kind film.
It's not.
It's not dark, but it's just not kind. The film has some really complex themes and some really just complex stuff that it brought up for me, which I don't think I had the energy to engage with when I put it on.
It's a heavy one.
I felt a little bit like I was being bullied while I was watching the film, and that's not because the film is especially intense. It's not All Quiet on the Western Front. It's a film about infidelity and sexual tension and a bunch of stuff that normally I would really love if I was in the mood. And I'm still not sure how all the pieces fit together, because the first third of the film is Aubrey Plaza playing a director who used to be an actress.
Yes.
Staying at the holiday home of a couple who are expecting a baby.
Yep.
They're not in a good place in their marriage, despite the baby being nearly here.
Oh, they're not married, by the way. Oh, that's another aspect.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
They seem to hate one another either way, or be done with one another.
Yeah.
And so it's just watching a lot of dysfunction.
It's one of those couples that's held together by the baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they jump in the car, hit the bear, and then they switch to it being a movie, but the infidelity is the wrong way around. So it's not like we're seeing the film that they're shooting.
Yeah, exactly.
When it first ended, the first third,
yeah,
and then she was an actress, I was like, oh, okay, so that was us watching the film that we're now seeing being made.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we've gone behind the scenes, but it's not that.
No, it's not.
And there's a narrative dissonance there, which makes me think that what we're seeing...
Well, it might not be.
Well, so there's a repeated refrain of Aubrey Plaza sat by a lake,
yeah,
on a towel,
yeah,
walking into the house, picking up a book.
Yeah.
So I've got my suspicions.
Good.
About how this film fits together.
Save it for a little bit, because I think I know where you're
going. I'm thinking I will. I'm confused.
Okay.
What it's actually done is... I just wasn't in a position, like I couldn't bear it.
Nice.
That was the problem.
Nice. Couldn't black bear it.
Couldn't black bear it, mate.
I hate this.
Yeah.
I regret this already.
I've got 15 of these.
This has switched so hard, so fast.
I want you to be prepared.
Oh my God. Right. Fuck you. I'm taking over. Right. I first watched this when I was not in the right headspace. I was having a wobble. I was feeling like shit. My mood was low. Everything was low. And I was like, Black Bear, it's got Aubrey Plaza in it. I'll give it a go. Why not? It's a little indie piece. Hit Sundance. Why not? See what happens. By the end of it, I was absolutely floored how quick this hour and 40 had just flown by.
Right.
Because it felt like nothing. Mm. And then the credits rolled and I was like, what has just happened to me?
I was transcended
to a different place. I'm working on a puzzle trying to figure out what it all means.
Mm-hmm.
There is themes and symbolism and deep cuts that have all been sort of like just left out there. They're just bare to the world.
They're just laid bare.
You
just all the way to the grisly end.
Why are you joining in? I hate this.
Because you love it.
Yeah.
Because you love it.
Deep down, I do. Old Ben is literally doing backflips right now.
Mate.
He's dropped his Pokemon cards. He's picked up his Pogs.
There you go.
Found a new slammer.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Get on my days. Right. And then I was like, fuck it, we need to do this on the show because I need to get deeper. And I can go deeper into stuff. I do it all the time.
Yeah, but then if you also have to go deep into a different film for your podcast,
it's hard to do.
It's inefficient.
Yeah, it's hard to do it twice in 1 week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
Busman's holiday. So when I worked in a kitchen, mm-hmm, I stopped cooking at home.
Right, there
Sex
you go.
Sex workers don't have the best relationships with their romantic partners because it's like, that's work. I'm doing that anyway.
Yeah, that's it.
It kind of takes
clocked out, mate. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
I'm a bit sore. Let's cuddle and watch Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let the lotion sink in. I hate this. All right. It's so late. It's so late. 3 might just be the magic number.
Mm-hmm.
I've written this. This is just walls of text. They are enormous. I'll get through stuff as quick as I can.
Okay.
But it brought up some stuff. It brought up a lot of stuff, right? So 3 might be the magic number because this is the story of a film that is in 2 parts.
It is.
Part 1, The Bear in the Road, and part 2, The Bear by the Boathouse.
Yes.
Both parts are thematically dense, thick with theme. Yeah. And it's almost...
This is somebody who had years to write and a week to shoot.
This is someone who had 15 years of writing other stuff, had 5 years to save up the budget, and thought to himself, what do I really want to say?
Oh, is it actually? Is that the actual story.
The Lawrence Michael Levine writes a lot of scripts for Hollywood. He does a lot of pilot scripts. He does a lot of sort of like script shopping, so stuff that's never going to get made, but it's on. It's like externally sourced stuff. Can you write a script about blah, 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 blah? Here's some cash.
Dogs of a Feather. It's people who go dogging.
That kind of stuff.
It's a sitcom set in the back of a VW camper van.
That's exactly what it is. And he does this stuff. He's done a few films before. They've all been rejected from Sundance. And then this time around, he was like, I want to make something that I really, really care about. And I can use some of my experience in 15 years of doing this
to
tell a story that I'm very qualified to tell.
My boy got cheated on.
there's stuff in there, right? So it's a thematically dense film, but it also remains completely open to interpretation.
Mm.
There's no right or wrong answers.
Yes.
And Lawrence has said this, and people have offered him theories, and he's like, shit, I didn't even think of that.
You love this. You love somebody half finishing
it's
a sentence.
It's not half finishing. I love getting a point across.
That's a mean way of putting it.
In
but
such an open way that it's like, that doesn't have to be the only meaning.
No, I know.
It's literally like having a deck of playing cards and going, there are 1,001 games that you can play in this.
Yeah.
And then us sitting here and going, yeah, but I want to play it this way. And then we make our own game.
Totally, yeah.
And you end
I get
up with
that.
Shithead.
I get that.
It's meant.
Again, and I've said it before on the show,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it can. I don't think this is true of this film, by the way.
Go on.
But I know you're a big fan of that style of filmmaking.
I am.
I sometimes feel it's a little bit like hiring a sex worker and her watching you wank off. It's like, no, you do it.
Are you thinking of Louis C.K.?
I feel it's a little bit like I've paid for someone to tell me a story,
right.
And I'm sat here telling myself a story.
Okay.
What am I paying for here?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I didn't really look at it that way. That's interesting. But I didn't look at it that way. That's something that I need to have a think about. But both of the parts of this film, they each comment on similar aspects, but they do it from opposite points of view.
Yes.
So The Bear in the Road deals with difficult relationship under a lot of stress, the trust issues, the creative process, jealousy, societal construct, gender roles, manipulation.
In the first thing as well, what really struck me is that they are beyond giving each other the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, they're way past
this. They have a social morality argument where both of them are right. But they just instantly assume that the other one is coming at it from the worst perspective and then continue under that. He's making a nuanced but slightly dog-whistly comment about feminism, and she's like, you're a chauvinist. And then he hears that and goes, you don't listen to me. And it's like, guys, just calm down.
They've gone past the point of building each other up and are now so resentful of each other that it's any given opportunity to undermine or knock back or belittle, it's taken just for sheer selfish joy. And we've all been in a relationship where it's hit that point where it should have ended a long time ago.
Yeah.
And this is why this film spoke to me.
Okay, fair.
So this is like the whole thing. Because again, right, single for a very, very long time. Whole healing journey going through, do you know what I mean? Having to sit and stare in the mirror quite a lot.
I do feel that this film for me is proof that you've been single too long.
Okay.
Because the amount of romantic cruelty in this film is astounding.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like this director spent his spare time going around slipping fake engagement rings into the champagne glasses of random couples at dinner.
Yeah.
And then just thought...
That's such a good way to spend your time,
right?
Objectively.
Right, you see, there we go.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
You're just going to go around car parks leaving handwritten notes saying, I'm pregnant.
That's hilarious.
Right.
That's such a good idea.
Right, here we go. And I just feel like for that level of cynicism, there's humor here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not at that point, it's some heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I feel like I've come far enough on my like healing journey to look at this and go, oh, that's a rough one to look at. Because been there, you know what I mean?
Dude, yeah.
Not proud of it.
Who hasn't?
Not happy about it, but I'm not going to sit here and lie.
I feel like anyone who thinks that they haven't been in a relationship like that
is
not self-aware enough and is not being rigorous enough with their own memory
of
how they've been in relationships, or they're 12.
Or Mormon. I've never seen an angry Mormon.
Oh no, they get angry, they just do it behind closed doors. It's if you see a town with no reported crime,
right?
People are still getting raped, people are still getting beaten, people are still getting stolen from. They just don't feel they can report it.
Right,
it's the same with Mormons.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now I don't want to watch that documentary anymore. That's fine. So it deals with a lot of stuff, right?
And it does.
And it has the main character, Allison, who's played by Aubrey Plaza, as the protagonist. I've put in my notes here, I don't want to say antagonist, but the inciting character sparking the conflict. She is the protagonist, but she is also the one that sort of...
It switches. So she starts as a temptress and then she ends up as jilted woman.
100%. So there's that. Whilst The Bear in the Boathouse deals with almost the exact same things, but it has a far deeper meta focus on the filmmaking process.
Yeah.
Except for now we've got the lead character, Allison, who is having the awful time having everything inflicted onto her by those around her.
Yeah, it's unbearable.
It's... Oh. Okay. All right. I'm starting to like him now. I'm sure. I think I'm going to catch on. This is fun.
Sorry, I interrupted.
So ultimately, both parts of this film are about betrayal, right? That's the big mm-hmm. overarching theme. It's all about betrayal. For Aubrey's character, Allison, one part betraying and one part betrayed. So along with the themes, we also have a running consistent character, the Black Bear.
Right, yeah. Doing crime in a Black Bear area.
The Black Bear. Stop it. The Black Barrier, did you just say? You're a fucking monster. But I'm going to get to the Black Bear shortly.
Okay, good.
I'm going to get to the Black Bear shortly. I'm just going to skip past this. I'm just going to drop a little seed. That'll grow into something, probably.
Don't drop your seed. It's against... The Bible says you shouldn't.
So why is this film in two parts, though? And again, this film is best viewed knowing as little as possible. Go into it completely blind. And if you want proof of this, go and watch the Kevin Smith interview with Lawrence Michael Levine and the three main cast members at Sundance, because it's Kevin Smith interviewing for IMDb.
Oh, that sounds mint.
Dude, it's incredible. Because obviously the cast are very obviously massive fans of the very famous Kevin Smith.
If you make indie films and you get to meet Kevin Smith, that's like a wrestling fan meeting John Cena and not being 10 years old in hospital.
100%. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Bah, 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 bah. So Kevin Smith is interviewing these guys at Sundance, and they are so close-lipped about it all. So give me a rundown of this film, and everyone is super, super tied off. Everyone gives almost the same answer, just slightly differently. It's like a different flavor of beige.
Yeah.
And you can see Kevin Smith trying to get blood from a stone, where he's just sort of like, right, you there, do you want to take an example from these two and learn how to do it properly? What's this film about? And after the third one, he's like, you know what? That's fine. Let's just go generic. How's Sundance? it's honestly incredible. But I do have some insight into why it's in two parts from director Lawrence Michael Levine. So when he was asked, was it always supposed to be in two parts? He said it was. That was the simple idea. To have two parts, one in which the protagonist is the one doing the home wrecking and then have her home wrecked. And then to invite the audience to think about the connection between the two. Is one happening because the other one happened? In which order? Mm-hmm. Which one is the inciting incident? And it's stuff like this, right? So for me, when I first watched Black Bear, I was a little confused.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. Something's just clicked.
It does. It does. And I'm going to get to it very shortly. Yeah.
Okay.
So are you clicking that in the story where, in the first part of the film, where she's like, I used to be an actress, I was difficult to work with.
I used to have a husband. Oh,
there's loads there.
Two together.
No, there's loads there. Dude, this is great though, because this took me about three watches to start doing this.
That's quite nice.
It is, and it gets nicer.
Oh, maybe I like this film.
It gets nicer.
Okay.
Stick with me on this one, bud. So when I first watched it, I was a bit confused as the timeline on what was real, what was fake. Was it dream? Was it made up? Was it, you know, whatever it was. And then after I sat with it for a while, and this film does sit with you for a while, just a heads up.
Yeah, no, I know.
I've not stopped thinking about this for literally about 3 weeks. I've told everyone that I know about it.
There's just enough Aubrey Plaza nudity in it for it to occasionally like repeat on you.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh yeah. And then you're thinking about the film again, but then it immediately pulls you into the dark.
It does.
It's like she's the little light on the head of the anglerfish.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh.
It's like a really cool angel on top of a Christmas tree, but the Christmas tree is made of fire ants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that. It's great.
It's great.
So it sat with me for a while, and I was working on the theory that the movie is told in reverse, which is okay, what's just clicked for you.
I hadn't thought of that.
No, it's good. So part two is the first part and happened long before part one. Allison is an actor who's perceived as difficult. She mentions that she doesn't have a husband. This is all in my notes, by the way. So everything you've just said, fucking perfect. I am so on track for this episode. Killing it in part one. And then in part two, we witness her marriage breaking down, which is like a flashback type thing. Right. Yeah. That's what I was working with. That's the theory I was working with. I was very comfortable with it. Had a great time.
I had a different one, but that's fine. I hadn't even considered yours.
That's fine. So I thought it was a story told in reverse. And Allison is reliving these scenarios whilst writing her new movie. But what about the third story that's being told, Rob, and dear listener? And from what perspective is it being told from? What does it say about storytelling and the creative process? We'll get to that shortly.
Oh, you absolute fucking cock tease.
But for now, it brings me to my next point. What does the Black Bear really mean? Well, what does the Black Bear symbolise? The nefarious titular Black Bear that is the unofficial fourth main character. What's it mean for you, Rob? What did you get from it, from its appearances that are sort of scattered throughout the movie? It can be literally anything, because like I said, this film is so wide open that there is no right or wrong answer. If you see the bear in a moment and you connect it to whatever moment, you go, oh, that could be a little something. That could be a little something. You're exactly right. And if you look at it and go, it's a fucking bear and they're in the woods, that's also right. Because guess what, buddy? In those woods where they were filming, there were bears.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about the bear. I tried going into the symbolism. I did wonder if it was a Coldplay song.
Okay.
Because they did that animated feature with a Yeti that I can't remember.
Did they?
There was an animated feature about magical Yetis or abominable snow. Abominable.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
It's almost entirely soundtracked by Coldplay.
Okay. That's probably why I've not said it.
But that, right. So I was there being like, they did a thing with bears, right? Did they do Brother Bear?
Okay.
But it was mainly because the film, this is the yellowest film I've ever seen, Ben.
There's a joke there that I'm not going to make.
Well, I am, because I've seen that tape of you and your ex where you end up having to mop up the bathroom floor.
Oh, yeah, but that's not
that's
a joke.
The second most yellow.
We're still trying to get that into festivals.
There's a short film festival on Instagram, and they put up a post being like, 10-minute open
We could open absolutely submission.
Live
right,
that. Here's the thing. I saved it for Comment Corner.
Right.
We'll come back to it for Comment Corner.
Sick.
Later on in the episode, we go through a few comments that we've received on social media.
Yeah.
I'll put it in there.
Thank you.
But no, it's a very yellow film, and I thought there might be some symbolism there. I thought it maybe brought you back to your relationship with the girl who was into weeing, but then I remembered that was a different mate who I lived with, and it was awful because...
I'm glad that you've rounded out the story with that and that it is, in fact, not me.
No, it's not
you.
And
then I'm a little bit annoyed that you were thinking, oh, that's Ben, and then it was someone else. So now I feel like I'm Aubrey Plaza you're pretending to fuck someone else.
It was a friend of mine that I had while you were in Telford and I was in London, and you were living your life. I wasn't, you know, we were separated at the time, Ben.
I'm not happy about this, Rob.
It was in the donut hole of our friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell me about your other best friend. Let's hear all about this.
Well, no, he stopped being my best friend because he wouldn't stop pissing on his girlfriend in the shared bathroom.
I thought you said in the shed. I was like, that is wholeheartedly, you probably would have been my best mate too. Because every time you hang out, oh, mate, yeah, let's go Bella Italia. I want some pasta. Yeah, pissed on the missus in the shed. Min. garlic bread?
this conversation, let's just take a pause.
Got you. Awful. Yeah. Don't make the fucking hand gestures at me.
Take a pause.
Yeah, I get it.
And come back to what the bear means, because all right. I feel like I've gone wildly off topic.
It's fine. just pissing on his missus in a shed. So for me, initially, I saw the bear as a metaphor for looming danger that Alison found herself in.
Mm-hmm.
We see it rustle the bushes just out of sight whenever she's playing with fire in part one. And it knocks the bins once she's absolutely shit-faced and thinks her husband's cheated in part two.
Right.
Both times are moments where life-altering decisions are being made.
Right.
Both from different perspectives, but the bear is present. So I was like, there's something there. It's always related to Alison.
It's not just popping up in the middle of the coffee break.
It's not just knocking
about. It's always happening at like intense moments.
It's never popping up for the crew or anyone else. It's just this thing, right? And then I leaned into the bear being heard, but not seen as a representation of when the betrayal of each scenario is about to become cemented. So
right.
there is like...
It's like the tipping point.
Yeah, at this point, it's just rumor.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
The betrayal
is only rumors, and it is about to hit the fucking... It's hit the bed. It's like a fork in the road type thing,
yes,
right?
Yeah. A sort of split between two polar bear opposites.
Oh my God. Right. That was pretty good. But there's no polar bears in the woods, Rob! But after reading what Lawrence Michael Levine has to say about it,
right,
I've switched it up again. So here's what he says. Lawrence says, I don't remember exactly. I wrote part one first, and part two ended up being based on an outline I'd written a decade ago. But I didn't know that's what I was going to do at the time. When I wrote part one, I don't think that I knew where it was going. I had these characters, I had a situation, but I didn't know how it was going to get to the resolve. And as I was writing, I came up with the idea that they could get into a car crash as the resolution of this story. I started to think what could make them swerve off the road in the middle of the night.
Yep.
It could be a skunk, but that wouldn't be the right vibe. And I agree.
Monochrome skunk.
Do you know what I mean?
dank skunk.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a text from a dealer cheeky you get at one skunk in the morning.
That's it, yeah, yeah.
Dank skunk, wet buds, so there are stinky cheese.
That's it, yeah, yeah.
Three bags for a tenner.
Gee, are you a shotter? What is happening? Is this what you're doing on the side? Is this what you're busy all the time?
It's a new sponsor. You can call my mate Steve on 07531287849.
That might be someone's number.
It might be.
Just bleep it just in case.
Just find out, listeners.
Don't text that number because that's insane. If you just doxed a stranger and then they're just... What if it's like Gladys in Wales? She's just sitting there for a cup of tea.
Name any 11 numbers and you've doxed a stranger.
No, I won't because I don't want to dox a stranger because I'm not a cunt.
Okay.
He carries on to say, there are black bears in those woods, so maybe I should use that. So I put in a black bear. It was more pragmatic than symbolic at first, but later, I did think that the bear is actually a really interesting symbol for this film because of its hibernation pattern.
Ooh.
The black bear represents life, death, and rebirth.
I mean, that's tenuous, but okay, he wrote it, so...
His thing, man.
Yeah.
It's his thing, it's his symbol.
I disagree, but it's his film.
And it's also symbolic of the dark forces of nature, and they can represent our repressed animal natures. I started to think about all of these things, and even if the bear was originally a pragmatic element, it was resonant with the themes that I wanted to explore.
Okay.
And so as I was writing the second part, I wove the bear into the imagery, knowing that I was going to be able to build a second confrontation with the bear that would be different. So, now knowing the symbolism of the bear, I have a slightly different take.
Right.
Robert McFarlane.
Right.
The black bear in part one represents death.
Mm.
The betrayal led to an awful situation where the consequences were life-ending. And it was the bear in the road that caused the car crash. They swerved off to avoid the bear, hit a tree, awful ending, end of part one. The bear in part two represents Allison's shot at rebirth. The betrayal gave Allison two choices. She's come face to face with the betrayal in front of her. She has two choices. She walks in that room and confronts them, or she turns around and walks away.
Mm-hmm.
So she accepts it and moves on, sees what happens, or she fights it.
Yeah.
And in my experience, and in Werner Herzog's experience, fighting bears never really ends well.
We don't know if he fought Mr. Chocolate. Now, this is a deep lore reference to a film that we've not covered on the podcast. So, dear listener, bear with us.
We watched
Werner Herzog did a film called Grizzly Man.
Yeah, he did.
Ben and I watched it, and it's just about this mental Californian.
I fucking love him.
Who just went into the woods and made friends with just raw bears.
Yeah.
Just untamed
wild bears.
And he called one of them was called Mr. Chocolate.
Yeah.
And he's like, Mr. Chocolate, Mr. Chocolate. And he would film himself just playing with a fucking
wild bear.
Straight bear.
Yeah.
And then no one found him for a while until they found his fucking rib cage.
Yeah, and part of his skull.
Yeah, and it was because it's Werner Herzog. It was like, he was never seen again.
They found his jawbone 3 miles down the river. It was glorious.
I often think of him when I make my films.
I want to see the baby.
Was he a force of nature or was he simply just a strange man?
I fucking love him so much. He used Werner to go Herzog. Around school. No, everyone involved in that project. It's fucking incredible. Go watch Grizzly Man. It's so good. So that's where I'm at with that part, right? So
right.
The second part, I think it's a shot at Allison's rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the second part, we see Allison and Gabe cuddling in bed after Allison has done something bad where she fucks the cameraman because she thinks that she's being cheated on.
Yeah, she's getting revenge.
It's revenge.
Yeah.
She calls him Bear. I still love you, Bear.
She does love you, Bear. Many times.
So Gabe himself being Bear, which is Allison's nickname. So Gabe himself being Bear represents the life that he manipulated and constructed to get the result that he needed to finish his creative project. They're all big, they're all scary, and it's all laced with danger and all kinds of fucked up, but all presenting their own opportunities. Three things that all happen in the movie, that all correlate to different parts of the story, and I fucking adore this.
Okay.
It tickles my brain.
I can see why you adore it.
Yes.
Because you like to masturbate to the prostitute. And tell your have that bit of where you finish your own story, right?
Do you know what this is?
And again, this is an unkind read for the sake of comedy.
Okay.
I do like this film. I do think, however, given everything you've just told me, that if the director's really not sure what the bear represents, and it's a choose your own adventure, there is a world in which you can write this film and not have a bear in it.
There is.
And there's very little changes.
Yeah. No, in that's terms exactly of its right. Impact. Yeah, that's right. The impact is exactly the same, but that's what makes it fun. This is where the little nugget of fun comes in. Because you keep saying it's about sex workers and masturbating to a sex worker. I see it as putting in a bit of effort.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like, I give something back.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Slip a digit.
Same mate who used to get his girlfriend's dress yellow, went to Thailand and got a really bad oral infection from going down on a prostitute. And I'm like, you paid 150 quid to go down on a prostitute. Now that...
150 quid?
Yeah.
In Thailand?
Yeah, I mean, I'm...
The fuck was this?
I'm
Royal
making
Palace?
Up numbers, Ben. I've never visited a woman of negotiable virtue.
Right. But, or Thailand, apparently.
Or Thailand.
Because
no,
the prices are advertised on fucking neon signs.
If I can't afford a prostitute, Ben, I can't afford a flight to Thailand.
Fair.
Right.
Fair. So, all right.
But my point is...
It's nice to see your preference of those two as well.
My point is, like, it's either a very stupid thing or it's a very generous thing.
Right.
And what I'm seeing here is that there doesn't have to be a distinction.
No, there doesn't.
You know?
There doesn't at all.
That's phenomenal.
I hate this so much.
Sorry, mate. I'll stop with the low quality jokes.
Right. Yeah, I'm switching us out of this fucking quick shot.
Yeah.
Because this leads me to my next point, Rob.
Does
and
it?
This is a little bit off topic, but it's something that really fucking tickled my brain in the right way.
Right.
It got me going in weird ways. It made me think about little things left, right, and center.
Mm.
And it's how the last frame of Black Bear changes the entire film for me.
Right. So I have a working theory about what's happening in this film, but I don't want to say it.
Not yet.
Because I feel like I'm going to cock block you.
You are.
So I'm just being edged.
You're being edged
by my best friend, like my hetero life mate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's horrible.
Honestly. Well, your man wife is going to put out shortly. At the moment, you're wanking at a sex worker. All right?
Yeah, and I don't like it. We've just established that.
I know, yeah. Put some fucking effort in and maybe you'll enjoy it. What I'm saying is... This brings me to this point. I'm going to get this point out of the way because it's a little bit off topic. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to swing back in. I want your theory. I'm going to give you my wind down of it all. It's all going to make sense. Probably. I'm not going to lie. I've rewrote this episode about four times. Every time I watch this film, my opinion changes. It's a fucking nightmare. So the last frame of this film shows Aubrey Plaza breaking the fourth wall and looking directly at us.
Yes.
Now, it's the exact same scene that has happened twice prior.
Yes.
But in those twice prior scenes, she writes a title in the book, she underlines the title, and then she looks out the window to her right. And it's as if to say, like, it's like a thinking thing. She's going off into the world and she's about to write her story.
Yeah.
This time round, however, the final frame, she does not do that. It's deadpan straight at us. Now, this is pure conjecture. And it's a bit of a tangent, but I feel like it's needed. I need to get it out of my system. The breaking of the fourth wall and addressing us directly, I think it gives us a message and it invites us in, and in doing so, changes the meaning of the entire film retroactively, much like part two did, much like part one did.
Right.
Cool. We're all with me. Fantastic.
Yeah, no, I have a horrible feeling you're about to steal my theory.
Absolutely not. I'm going way off topic now. I'm not even talking about Black Bear. So breaking the fourth wall, when it's used well, it can bring the audience in and can change how we feel about the moment that's happening.
Yeah.
Gives a whole different dynamic to it. We see it a lot with horror movies. Psychopaths do it a lot. They address the audience. They bring you in. Michael Haneke's Funny Games. They make us complicit in their crimes.
It's quite a sort of posh, nerdy reference, but Deadpool.
Oh, Deadpool's my next one, where it says here, self-aware characters wanting the audience to be along with the ride, whether they're invested in the film or not, because I didn't think that that would be a good reference for you.
Oh.
So whether you're invested in the film or not, it kind of brings you along for the ride.
Yeah, it does.
Deadpool.
Nice.
See, we're on the page,
We're
man.
Swapping.
We're on the page.
It's horrible.
It's good, isn't it? I'm the fucking Buckner now, bitch.
Yeah, you
Give
are.
Give me that Turkish copy of Magnolia.
You love her more than me.
I do.
You do? You actually like Magnolia, and I've got three fucking copies of it in different languages.
So far.
Oh, God.
Magnolia's a mint film. Mint film. I'm going to die on this hill. Anyway.
Thomas Anderson's a hack.
So breaking the fourth wall in the final of a movie also isn't a new idea. This has happened before in the final frame. In Bong Joon-ho did this at the end of his film Memories of Murder.
Okay.
So in Memories of Murder, however, it's a little different. That film is based on a real serial killer.
Mm.
Real unsolved cases that remained unsolved until long after the film was released.
Right.
So Bong Joon-ho had his character, Detective Park Doo-man, stare directly down the lens as a message not to the whole audience, but to one person in particular, the serial killer himself that the film was based on.
Right, okay.
And it was this guy's still at large, by the way. He's not now, but he was at the time.
He was at the time, so...
He believed that the killer would not be able to resist going and seeing his own crimes playing out on the big screen, so he wanted to send him a message. When the fourth wall is broken, we're all complicit in the crimes portrayed. It could be anyone watching right now. We could be in the same screen as them. We might know them without even realizing. But the message was clear. We're still looking for answers. This will not go away, and you will be found. And all of that was communicated
with a look,
with one look,
yeah,
and the final frame.
Bong Joon-ho is a madman. He's the director of Parasite and Mickey 17,
Snowpiercer,
and he's an absolute madman. Yeah, he's a machine.
He's incredible. So the real life killer that Memories of Murder was based on was eventually found.
Right,
he confessed to everything.
Yeah,
and he was asked if he'd seen Bong Joon-ho's film, to which he replied, "Yeah, I felt nothing. It was just a film on a screen."
If you're asking a serial killer for a rational, emotional response to watching murder, then maybe you've done your market research wrong. But that's it.
So I hope that piece of shit rots in jail forever.
Yeah.
My unofficial theory is that this is a bit of an homage to Korean cinema, because this is in no
wildly
way...
wildly different from my theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't the wrap-up. This is just the final frame.
Okay.
So in an interview, Lawrence has given a few examples of his favorite films, or films that he thinks that everyone should see. And there was a Korean film in there that is so niche that I couldn't find a copy of it anywhere.
Fine, okay.
And it was one of these things.
So there's evidence in the world Larry enjoys the Korean fruits.
He enjoys Korean cinema. Right. And I've just pieced all this together out of pure bullshit, just to tie this out, just to edge you a little bit longer.
Right.
Because now this leads me to, what does Black Bear really mean?
Before you do what it actually really means.
This isn't actually what it really means. This is just what I think it means.
Okay.
And every reason that I think it means it.
I just feel like, as the man who's done the research and has bonded with the film, I'd like to give you the final word.
Oh, dude, go for it. Right. This is the time. If you're going to give me your theory, now is the time, and I'm gasping
so
for
there's a real subtle cultural clue in this movie that I think you've missed.
Okay.
It all kind of ties the film together. So the restart we keep seeing.
Yeah.
Is the character who's writing or directing sitting by the side of a lake, by a pool of imagination or whatever, walking into the house and deciding to write.
Yeah.
Now, the director in the film, there's evidence that he's a proper dickhead really early on.
Yeah.
He's not a pleasant man. He's manipulating his wife's emotions, pretending to himself that he's using the very core of their marriage and her emotional stability.
Yeah.
Ostensibly to get a better performance from her, inverted commas.
Oh, yeah.
Really, he's doing it so that he can play away from home and not feel as guilty about it.
Justifying it.
He's got a cover story that he can believe.
Exactly. Right? That's all it is.
Right. But you kind of get a warning about all this because he wears one of those little woolly fisherman's hats. But he wears it unrolled on the top of his head.
Right.
Like sort of someone's thrown a condom on an erection from a distance.
Are you saying this because I've got a grey one and I wore it the other day?
Almost like a fucked up carnival game of like bag the bell end, but just the bell end.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're going to wear a woolly hat, wear it properly on your head. Don't wear it placed upon your head with 3 litres of air inside.
Is this what Black Bear really means?
For me.
Right.
I think it is the subtle clue that the director sees himself as a bell end.
Right, okay.
With a condom hat on.
Sure.
And that he can't figure out what the film is supposed to be about.
Okay.
So has self-inserted himself as Aubrey Plaza.
Right.
Going from the lake house, sitting down, writing the book, dies at the end. They have the car crash and she goes, okay, that's the first draft.
Okay.
She goes back to the lake, or she never leaves the lake. She just sits there.
Yeah.
And she's thinking of all the films she could write.
Yeah.
And then the final scene where she sits down and writes Black Bear, which is the title of the film we're seeing, is when she sits down and writes the film we're seeing.
Okay.
We see her write one film that's a little short. It's about half an hour.
Yeah.
She writes another film. That's an hour. And then the third one she writes is the film we've just watched.
Oh, okay.
I think the Aubrey Plaza character going from the lake to the book is the, okay, let's tell a story.
I like
this. So the third one is looking at the camera because let's tell you a story, and it's the one that we've just been told.
Ooh, I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Not the bit about the hat, because I have one. That's fine. I like the rest of it. That was really good.
But when you see the film again, and I'm sure you will,
No, I picked up on the hat because I was literally thinking maybe I get one in blue.
No, no, Ben, no.
Mine's light grey.
All right, Bear, you do you.
You know what I mean?
You do you.
Thanks, man.
I think you just pander ring to...
Oh, my God.
To fashion choices.
Yeah, I'm the one that's pandering with these fucking jokes, am I? Yeah, yeah, sick. All right, yeah. So...
Sorry, you weren't prepared for that one.
I'm going to kill myself. So... That's a mint theory. I really like that.
Thank you, babe.
Mine is waffly as fuck, so you're just going to have to bear with me. All right?
All right.
Because it's...
Sorry, I'm going to have to what?
Oh! Yeah, mint. Mint. Love that this is sticking.
Welcome to the Matrix.
That was That wasn't on purpose. That just slipped out. Yeah. Cool.
It's a bare middle.
Black Bear's a story told in two parts. Part one, The Bear in the Road, and part two, The Bear by the Boathouse. Both parts of this film... and the universe that they exist in all reside within the third storyline. See where we're getting three is the magic number. I'm bringing it back to the first point. This is bookending, mate. I'm trying writing. So it's in the third storyline that is running throughout the film. Alison writing her next project.
Right.
Now, is Alison drawing from personal experience to craft a story, Black Bear? Is it all imaginary? Is it dreams?
These are all good questions, but I was hoping you were going to tell me the answer to them.
Is it the quiet meditation next to the lake that brings all of these scenarios to her? Oh, I'm going, bud. I'm going. I believe.
Okay.
And it's conjecture, because again, there's no right or wrong answers. This is one of those films. I believe that everything happens in this film is true. To what degree? I'm not sure. But I'm certain that all of the things that happen are drawn from personal experience, right? So things happened. Alison is deciding how to write it. So how to portray the events that happened.
Right.
The film itself is a meta look at the creative process, right? And the lengths that people go to achieve it. We're told this by Alison, but is she a reliable narrator or is she a reflective storyteller? So bear with me, it comes to a point. I hate this. Black Bear shows us a portrayal from different perspectives of the same character. One as a home wrecker and one as someone who's had a home wrecked. And like with any account of events that has happened, there are always multiple ways to view it.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on who you ask, depends on what side of the story you get. But somewhere in the middle, between every version of the story, separate from any personal sway, it is the objective truth.
Right.
What actually happened. So Black Bear had me wondering, what do I embellish? How do I skew memories to make them better or worse for myself?
Mm-hmm.
And it leaves me with this really fucking scary question. How reliable am I as a narrator for the events that I live? And it is fucking me up beyond belief, buddy.
Yeah.
Because every memory that I'm looking at, I'm like, am I doing this to seem better? Am I doing this to punish myself? Am I leaning more on certain aspects because it portrays me in a better light?
Yeah, I mean,
makes the situation better.
I think we all instinctively do both, right? We twist memory to punish ourselves for things we think we deserve punishing for.
Exactly.
And we twist memories to punish other people for things that we feel that we should be innocent in. And both are equally wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they're not the truth.
No.
It's just a perspective.
Yeah.
Which is fine. So it's like a hyper-personal insight. It's asking awkward questions that are designed to help us try and find the objective truth. Regardless of whether we are the home wrecker or whether we have our home wrecked, it is all about perspective. And by breaking the fourth wall in the final frame, Alison personally gives us everything that she is contemplating before writing, almost tasking us to find the objective truth in a world that is so easily manipulated into something that it's not. And what a fucking way to do it other than this film. It has ruined me.
Okay.
Beyond belief.
Okay, that's good. I like that.
Everything that I've done, the year of healing, the things that I'm doing, the things that I'm talking to myself about, I'm holding the mirror up, I'm staring at it and I'm going, this was the situation.
Yeah.
And I have to be comfortable with that. But how reliable am I as a narrator that I'm not just comfortable with a wildly skewed version of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I've got a question for you on that, though.
Do it.
Which is, let's make an arbitrary situation that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Let's say you're looking back on a relationship with somebody you no longer speak to.
Sure.
And you're never going to speak to again.
Mm-hmm.
What's the moral harm
right
in remembering it wrong if it helps you heal quicker and better and more effectively?
Because I'm not actually healing.
Okay.
I'm healing from a made up scenario that doesn't have the true weight of what I actually lived through.
Okay.
So it's like therapy light. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's dealing with something just enough that I can go to sleep and not think about it anymore. But then in 10, 15, 20 years time, if I'm ever in a position where something crops up that's similar, am I going to react in a similar way because I've not learned the lesson that I could have learned by staring deeper?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It does feel at a certain point you've just got to swallow and stop chewing, right?
1,000%. 1,000%. That is exactly it. This is all the shit that I got from this film.
Okay.
And everything that I've been trying to deal with for a long ass time is finally coming through to a head. And I'm looking at stuff like this and I'm going, what?
You see, I fall very much on the side of, if it doesn't hurt anyone and it's not going to lead to beliefs that hurt people in the future,
yeah.
Just fucking swallow.
Yeah, 100%. Right? I'm with you wholeheartedly, right. But the thing that worries me, the thing that I get not nervous about, the thing that I doubt myself in sometimes is that I'm not getting as much out of the lesson as I could be. And it's going to be,
why are you min-maxing life, dude?
It's like, not min, I don't know. I kind of feel like if you've got a rough as fuck situation, you need to get something out of it. There's a lesson in there. There's morals to be learned.
Totally. But like, personal growth. Until the car is parked on the side of the road before we start investigating the crash site. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You are right. It takes time. I can't speed run it.
This is pot calling the kettle black because I'm sat here in the midst of 1,000 crises that I can't even bring up. Do you know what I mean?
Like, same. Right, and so. We're both sitting here. We can talk and do as much as we want, but unless we're willing to really sit and stare in the mirror, it's a difficult thing to try and like whittle it down to.
I've successfully managed to defer all healing and all progress until I can have it done by a professional therapist.
Yeah.
But I'm also in a position where I can't afford a professional therapist. So I've just parked it and just gone, I will get a professional to deal with that. But I'm also not prioritizing getting a professional because they're fucking expensive and I'm too poor.
They are. There's a few around here that are actually like really fucking good and really affordable.
Okay, that's good.
I have a few numbers and there's a few that I haven't been to. There's a couple that I wouldn't go to because I go to them.
Yeah.
We can share a therapist if you want. That'd be weird. But
Eiffel Tower, high five over, you know, the top. I mean?
Nah. No, not again. But the thing about this film is, if the ending or the resolution doesn't feel like it does much for you, it doesn't feel complete, doesn't feel...
No, it felt complete.
Well-rounded enough. Mm. It's just because Alison hasn't written it yet.
Oh, that's... No.
Enjoy that one.
Yeah.
Let that one sink in.
Yeah, I'm all right. We're low on time, so how about this? Mm-hmm. How about we do a quick visit to Comic Corner and see what people are saying about us on the internet?
I'm into it.
Then let's rate the movie.
I'm in.
And then after the show, we'll talk some more for Patreon. I've got a really good bear joke that you've probably heard, but it's a long one. It wouldn't have fit in the episode.
Right, okay.
But I really like it. And I'd heard it years ago.
I'm desperate to hear it.
Okay. So firstly, Comment Corner. We mentioned it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Our film festival got in. Well, they didn't get in touch. They posted online. They had the brass bollocks to post online and be seen on my phone.
Right.
And
how rude.
I was devastated.
I can imagine.
And all they said was, submit your short film. 10 minutes, will what? And I asked, will whatever I submit have to be watched by another human being?
Right.
Like anything.
Yeah, sure.
And they went, well, you can submit anything under 10 minutes as long as it doesn't discriminate or offend a group of people or promote hateful speech and demonstrates artistic integrity.
Well, that's 90% of your stuff out the window.
Right. Well, only because of the last point.
Okay.
So I then replied.
Oh, here we go.
Because I had something and I said, so just hypothetically,
sure,
purely hypothetically.
I'm so nervous.
If I were to say, if I had 10 minutes of footage of me reading the script of the B movie to a jar of captive wasps.
Right.
And they just replied, just submit already.
Oh, okay.
So well,
that was way tamer than I thought it was going to be. I started sweating a little bit. I was like, where's this going?
Yeah, I thought I'd do that.
Yeah, sick.
But what this has led me to do is contemplate. We're way too busy to do the things we've even promised that we were going to do.
So I'm struggling to do the bare minimum of normal
the
adult
stuff.
The what
minimum?
Fuck you. Fuck
but,
you.
But if listeners could please submit via our Discord or email us everymovieeveruk@gmail.com your best idea for a very low effort 10-minute short film that you'd like Ben and I to submit to the film festival.
100% I'm in for this.
Just send them in.
Yeah, all right? We can do this.
I'll create a channel on Discord for it And if you can get in touch and we'll chew the fat. It's one shot is preferable.
One shot is doable.
One shot. A single unbroken 10-minute shot.
Yeah.
But just remember the rules. It can't be hateful, can't be discriminatory, and it has to have artistic integrity.
Yeah, I'm in for this.
Brilliant.
I'm willing to make it. Even if we don't win anything, I think it'd be fun for us to have a couple weird little things. Mm-hmm. We can chuck it on Patreon. We'll chuck it on Patreon.
Okay. Because I was thinking maybe putting googly eyes on my asshole and clenching.
That'll be fine on Patreon. Just,
yeah, maybe.
You do that on Patreon. That's fine.
Like you can, I won't. Because yours will have a beard. Mine's hairless. I'm like a dolphin down there.
No, I've shaved recently.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I wanted to go swimming. I need to go fast. So
makes sense.
You know what I mean? Wiping my ass was like trying to get fudge out of a shag carpet.
Oh, what are you rating, Black Bear?
That was feral. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, that was awful.
Wasn't prepared.
You get two more.
No,
two more, and then I'm leaving.
Okay, fine. Okay, if it's so unbearable. What are you rating, Black Bear?
I'm going to give this an 8.
Celebrate this 8.
Yeah, because this it's done wonders for me,
mm-hmm.
but it's left me in a bit of a hole.
Okay.
Which is fantastic. The performances are insane. I don't think I've seen a better Aubrey Plaza role.
No, I don't think I have either. She got a lot of credit for her performance in Ingrid Goes West, which is a fine film.
Yeah, I love it. But
nothing she does in that film holds a candle to what she does in this one.
An Evening with Beverly Loughlin, she's mint in that as well.
And she's great in everything, but yeah. I don't think she's been better than this.
No, this is the best. Do you know what she said about this role as well, just really quickly?
Right.
So they asked who inspired her and did any sort of films mm-hmm. get her going. She was like, my work is kind of an homage to Gina Rowlands in Woman Under the Influence. And what's so interesting is while we were shooting this film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out. I went to see it in a small theater in the place that they were filming. I can't pronounce it. Adirondacks. Adirondacks.
I don't know because
I don't care.
I've never heard that word
I also
before,
don't
but
care.
Both
it's
of them
somewhere.
Sounded good.
So somewhere, a mm-hmm. little theatre where they were filming this film, and there's that scene where Leonardo DiCaprio is doing the performance in the cowboy show and he's losing his grip. That is what I was trying to do. Pull off this challenging part with all of these layers.
Aww.
So one of my favourite films of all time
yeah.
inspired this absolute fucking masterpiece in the darling gem.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I just,
yeah,
it
yeah.
made the world feel complete.
Aubrey Plaza's good people. She's such
fucking
a film
great
she's,
people.
She's one of the few people, well, I mean, there's loads of them,
mm.
but you don't see them very often at her level in the film industry.
You don't.
There are a million and one people who know film far better than I do,
mm-hmm.
but to know film as well as Aubrey Plaza does
mm-hmm.
and be at her level in Hollywood.
And also be in Scott Pilgrim.
Is kind of unheard of.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's good. I didn't bomb with it as much.
Okay.
I do think I fell victim to when I watched it and how I was feeling when I watched it. I think if I were to try this again in a year or so when I'd forgotten most of it, mm-hmm. but kind of knew a little bit more about what I was getting into.
Yeah.
And so could watch it when I was in the right mood for it.
Got you.
I think it would score higher.
Okay.
But we're not in that world. So I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay. 7's good, man.
It's a very well put together film. I think it is possible mm-hmm. for a viewer to watch this.
Yeah.
Think it's pretentious, fart sniffy nonsense and not enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so I can't give it an 8. It's a low 7, but it's a 7 nonetheless.
I'm good with a 7.
Yeah.
I'm good with that, man.
Right. Unfortunately, gang, that is it. That's the end of the show. We
that
love you all dearly.
We
Thank
do.
You for hanging out with us. We've got a Patreon. It starts at £1 a month.
Yeah.
The episodes are unedited. They run usually anywhere from 15 minutes to 30 minutes longer.
They will forever be ad-free because we're doing stuff our end at the moment.
Yes,
it's
we
taking
are.
Taking a little longer than we expected, but
we are still planning to run ads for baby powder and crushed up whale bone.
Well, baby oil needs a rebrand, you know what I mean?
Damn right. It really does.
Yeah.
Or does it? Does it lean in?
Ooh.
Does it lean in?
I hope not.
When you really...
Because I think that's what it was used for previously.
Ben is now going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, feelings of the show to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. So here's a Monday motivational pep talk for you based on Black Bear while I just tell you to consume.
It's two sides to every story, and somewhere in the middle is the objective truth. So you need to bear in mind that when you're listening to new things, or if you're building an opinion on something, just remember that it's perspective, not an opinion. Like, for instance, my perspective is that I fucking hate bear jokes now, but that also might be an objective truth.